kill us?
That would be a waste, Shade said. As you said, the Order operates very differently now. It does not maintain a roster of assassins at all. Rather, we make connections. Quiet allies. A job worth doing is worth doing well. Therefore, to do a job well, you must find someone who thinks it's worth doing. That is what we do. Find jobs that require doing and match them to the person who thinks doing them is worthwhile.
So you're talking about a volunteer network, Jason said.
Something like that, Shade said. The fall of the original Order of the Reaper was not unwarranted. The founding purpose of the Order was to do what was necessary. Over time, it became more controlling, seeking to rule from the shadows rather than serve. The new structure was designed to place the power to act in the hands of others, to let their judgment and conscience be the guide.
That's what the tests are for, Jason said. To find people with the principles you want in an agent.
Yes.
What if we say no? Jason asked. What if we don't want to be part of your order?
It is not my order, Shade said. I am merely an administrator for this trial. There are other such tests looking for people and taking many forms. Once this one is done, my obligations to the Order are done. As for you, you are not being invited to the Order. All that is being asked of you is that you be open to it should the Order find a task to which you are suited.
Sounds reasonable, Jason said. Like standing at the top of a slippery slope. It's fine, because you're at the top. What about the other people in the trial? You'll use them too, right?
If the right circumstance and person come together, then we will use anyone.
How does that work? A person just happens across a situation where their natural inclination will be to intervene?
Just so.
And what makes you think Humphrey and I won't talk?
Your reluctance to speak even to me demonstrates that you have the wisdom to understand the repercussions of doing so. As for Humphrey Geller, he never learned about it in the first place.
Humphrey disappeared into thin air, and Jason snorted a laugh. That's the duplicating magic you used for the old resolve test, right?
It is, Shade said.
So now I just go?
You should take the scythe with you first.
Wait, I can really take the scythe?
Yes.
I didn't think you'd let me take it. Actually, that makes sense. It really rams home the idea that the Order is dead and gone. Otherwise, why would they leave the very symbol of their Order to languish in some diamond ranker's collection like any old trinket?
Indeed.
What about the whole object of death thing?
That only applies to the replica in the room below.
What do I tell people about how I got the scythe?
Use your ingenuity.
That's helpful.
If you cannot figure that much out, then you wouldn't be much use to the Order.
I don't much want to be.
He wandered over to the scythe, slowing down as he approached.
You're sure there's no instant death field?
Yes.
How do I know you're not lying?
You don't.
That's terrific.
You may leave without it. If you like.
Just because I take this, it doesn't mean I'm willing to be your assassin.
I think you'll find that if ever the Order does contact you, Jason Asano, the circumstances will be more complicated and nuanced than a simple assassination.
Just Jason is fine.
I would prefer to refer to you as Mr. Asano.
Whatever rows your boat, Cobber. With a steeling breath, Jason moved up to the scythe and grabbed it. Item: Scythe of the Reaper. Diamond rank: legendary. The symbolic legacy of the Order of the Reaper. Tool: scythe. Effect: question mark, question mark, question mark. 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 The scythe wouldn't budge from its rack.
Why is it stuck? Jason asked.
I thought you said I could take it.
It is not affixed in place, Shade said. You simply lack the strength to shift its weight.
Huh.
After a series of attempts that failed to so much as shift the scythe on its rack, Jason came up with something new. Standing right up to the scythe, he opened his inventory window on the other side. Then, with one hand on the scythe, he stepped back, the window following. When it touched the scythe, the weapon vanished, appearing in his inventory as an icon. Jason looked at it with satisfaction. Nice. Quest, the hidden trial. Objective complete. Claim the scythe. 1 of 1. Quest complete. 100 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory. Reaper token has been added to your inventory.
Okay, Jason said wearily. I am really ready to get out of here.
He headed back in the direction of the archway he had come through. He was about to step in when someone stepped out. It was Sigrid, Valdis's team member. What are you doing here? Jason asked, stepping back to give her space.
I'm not sure, Sigrid said, looking around. Where is here?
She figured it out, Shade said.
I realized that the reason you wanted out was to avoid the attention of the Order of the Reaper that still existed.
Well, congratulations, Jason said. Shade can explain everything. I'm out. I took the scythe, by the way, so you have to ask Shade if he has a spare.
A spare?
Shade, Jason said, pointing at the archway. Does this thing actually go where I want this time?
It does.
Great, Jason said, patting Sigrid on the shoulder. I'll see you on the other side.
Chapter 61. Making an Exit. The Shadow Gate took Jason from the tower at the heart of the city to one of those at the city's edge. He emerged at the base of one of the archway towers, not far from where the ruins gave way to sea. He was surrounded by other adventurers, milling about, regrouping, or making their way up to the stairs that wound their way around the tower. He was immediately bombarded with messages as his contacts and party members came into range. His team quickly contacted him through voice chat, relieved that he had come back alive. Humphrey had already arrived, surprised that Jason hadn't appeared first, and had told the team about the tests they faced. From the crowd gathered, it seemed as though Shade had sent everyone to the same tower to exit. Jason quickly found Humphrey, easily identified as he stood taller than everyone but the few Leonids and Draconians for a face-to-face conversation.
What happened? Humphrey asked. I left right after you, but you're only arriving now.
Shade wanted a quiet chat, Jason said softly, not wanting to draw attention.
Humphrey raised an inquisitive eyebrow.
Did you?
Yeah.
Humphrey shook his head.
I never should have doubted you.
You doubted me?
No, now that I think about it.
Jason laughed, slapping Humphrey on the shoulder. Let's go track down everyone else. Clive and Neil had teamed up with Beth's team, minus Beth herself, who was absent with Jason and Humphrey. While plenty of groups were taking their last opportunity to hunt treasure, the mixed team had taken it upon themselves to look for cultists. Clive had brought along everything he could think of to track potential cultist activity, but had come up empty. Jason and Humphrey met up with Clive and Neil, who led everyone to where Jory and Sophie had set up a comfortable space to wait for everyone else. Rather than go search for fresh enemies or last-minute treasure, they had picked out a nice spot by the water, strung up a camp shade and a hammock, laid down a blanket, and put out a folding chair. Sophie relaxed in the hammock as Jory sat contentedly in the chair, both reading books. Jason and Humphrey converged on the little camp, arriving just after Clive, Neil, and Beth's team. The greetings were warm with relief at having passed through weeks of life-threatening danger. The feeling of having survived everything and knowing they were safe for the moment was amazing. It was only heightened by the bitter knowledge that not every team was so lucky. Even Sophie joined in the welcoming hugs, at least for Humphrey. Jason, she gave a look up and down, and a simple,
"You didn't die then."
"Disappointed?" he asked.
"I'm glad you're alive," she conceded. "There'd be a bunch of legal trouble with my indenture if you died."
"That seems harsh," Neil said. "And that's coming from someone who was vaguely hoping he would at least get maimed a little." "Oh, I'm feeling the love here," Jason said.
"You did almost kill her," Jory said. It took me and the priest of the healer to cleanse that curse and the poison you loaded her up with. Even then, it was a near thing.
They expanded Jory's camp space with more chairs and a refreshments table filled with sandwiches and iced tea. As they settled in, Sophie sat next to Jason on a soft rug, casually knocking her shoulder into his.
"I am glad you didn't die," she said softly, as if the reluctant sincerity of her words were a skittish animal that would run off when startled.
Jason flashed her a trademark impish grin.
"While our esteemed team leaders have been trying to get themselves killed over a scythe no one apparently got their hands on," Clive said, "the rest of us were looking into the cultist problem. I've been concentrating our search around the tower, because these towers ringing the city are the anchors that bind this astral space to our world. The cultists will have to disrupt them to sever that connection, so I've been looking for traces of magical interference. The towers are fascinating in themselves, but, so far as I can tell, the one here is functioning unimpeded. It could be they're working on other towers, or using some kind of astral magic we've never heard of."
"Maybe the cultists didn't want to risk sending anyone," Humphrey suggested. "Emir's people were checking auras."
"No," Jason said. "The cultists could have either sent people who didn't have star seeds, or people who've had star seeds so long that the aura imprint the magic society has for them includes the seed."
"You think the cultists been in Greenstone long enough for that?" asked Mose.
Mose Cavendish was Beth's cousin, an elf with destructive fire and wind spells who Jason and Humphrey had shared a contract with in the past. A classic glass cannon, he had worked hard since then to earn a spot on his cousin's team.
"They've definitely been in Greenstone for a while," Neil said. "You don't operate on the scale we've seen without people taking notice. Not unless you build up very slowly and very carefully."
"The question on my mind then," Humphrey said, "is whether Clive not finding anything is good or bad."
"Definitely bad," Jason said. "We're all about to evacuate. If I was a deeply committed cultist, and the fact that they all explode when caught suggests they are, then I wouldn't try anything with everyone here. I'd stay behind and get the job done once we're all gone. Presumably, being trapped here only lasts until the astral space is cut loose and the builder comes along to scoop it up."
"I'm not sure I'm following this conversation," said Hudson.
He was the frontliner for Beth's team, and even larger than Humphrey, with a propensity for conjuring walls of earth. Jason's team was unusual in how much they knew about the Builder cult and the threat they posed. Beth's team and Jory listened with horror as Clive explained. During the explanation, Beth rejoined her team. Valdis and Keen's teams also found their way to the camp, requiring Clive to backtrack his explanations a couple of times. That proved helpful. The repetition helped those less adept at taking in the explanations of great astral beings, astral spaces, and the idea of stealing them. Some of the foreign adventurers already knew some of it, notably Valdis and Sigrid. Even they had little understanding of the mechanisms involved, however, and were impressed as Clive elucidated the various details.
"Are you sure you're happy with your current team?" Valdis asked him again, earning a swat on the arm from Sigrid.
"Right in front of his team," Sigrid said. "You are shameless. Also, he's not going to agree to leave them while they're right in front of him. You have to take him aside where you can explain how much better we are."
Jason burst out laughing.
"And you say he's shameless?"
Clive finished the explanation with the assumption that the Builder cult would be targeting the astral space they were currently in.
"So what do we do?" Valdis asked. It was clear going in that the cult would be after this astral space. Did anyone devise a plan to deal with that?
"We had no idea what we would encounter," Jason said. "Basically, we were told to keep our eyes open and trust our judgment."
"In our earlier discussion, before you came along," Clive said, "we concluded that the cultists among us would likely be staying behind while the rest evacuate before the astral space closes,
leaving them free to do their work once everyone else is gone," Valdis reasoned.
"Disregarding the monsters, those ghost things and the flesh creatures anyway. Could we try taking some kind of rostler? All these teams were scoping each other out before we even came. I bet we could get a full list of participants if we asked around."
"Wouldn't matter," Sigrid said. There's no way of knowing who died or used their escape medallions to leave. We don't even know if Shade sent people to other archway towers to leave. This looks like everyone, but we can't be sure.
I don't think there's anything we can do, Humphrey said.
We don't have much in the way of options that I can see, and we won't have any once we leave. Staying behind is not an option either. Success would still mean being trapped here forever, while failure would leave us in the Builder's hands.
Valdis nodded.
I don't see any worthwhile option either. In which case, we may as well leave. There's nothing left for us here.
Jason, Beth, and Humphrey looked at each other and shared a nod.
Agreed, Beth said.
Keen's team leader, Roland, did likewise. They joined the steady stream of people already ascending the tower, chatting as they casually made their way up the spiraling stairs. The steps were stone pegs set into the tower wall, wide enough to go two by two. The teams mixed together, relaxing and talking together, now that they were almost out. The front cluster consisted of Valdis, Sigrid, Beth, Humphrey, Jason, and Keen.
You know, I actually had a chance at the scythe, Beth said.
Really?
Valdis asked, shooting a glance at Sigrid.
There was an extra room for people who figured out the last puzzle, Beth said.
What was the hidden trial? Valdis asked.
Best kept to myself, thank you, Beth told him.
That's what Sigrid said, Valdis complained.
Then you should stop asking, Sigrid told him.
I was too late, Beth said. I was the fourth one there. I didn't see who got the scythe because they'd already left, unless Sigrid was lying, and she took it before I got there.
I didn't, Sigrid said.
According to Shade, Beth said, someone figured out the hidden trial before the rest of us knew there was one, which is how they went and claimed it so quickly.
That definitely wasn't Sigrid then, Valdis said. I was with her when she figured it out. Jason and Humphrey, you two were already gone. You practically leaped through that shadow gate.
I just wanted to get out before people turned on each other over the scythe, Jason said.
You say that, Valdis said. But if I recall correctly, Humphrey was wondering if you'd figured it out right before the pair of you made yourselves scarce. You were the first two through the gate.
Jason, did you get the scythe? Keen asked.
Of course not, Jason said.
He's lying, Sophie said from behind Jason. You can tell when he's lying.
How? Valdis asked with eager curiosity.
He's awake, Sophie said. Even his body language is manipulative.
That's true, Humphrey said with a laugh.
I'm feeling very put upon.
I know your pain, Valdis said, giving Jason's shoulder a commiserating pat. My team gangs up on me too.
You say gang up, Sigrid said. Somehow he always seems to outnumber us, even though there's just one of him.
I can't help having the virile verve of 10 men, Valdis said. It's just the way I am.
It's a blessing and a curse, right? Jason asked.
So true, Valdis agreed.
We should push them off the side, Sigrid said. I don't know about your guy, Sophie said, but ours has a slow fall power, so it's no good.
They reached the top, where Shade was guiding adventurers through the shadow gate in the middle of the flat roof. As Jason approached, Shade stopped him.
Oh, what now? Jason asked.
You have the Reaper's token, Shade said.
How do you know that?
I can sense it. I am connected to it.
Why?
Jason asked warily.
I am a summoned being, Shade said. I could be described as a familiar of this place, in the same way I was once the familiar of the man who built it. Like all familiars, I am an astral entity merely inhabiting this vessel. My true nature is a shadow of the Reaper.
Wait, Jason said. You mean the Reaper's actual shadow? As in, park a lamp next to the guy and whooshka, there you are?
The Reaper has many shadows, Shade said. I am but one of a multitude.
So what does this token do exactly? Jason asked.
Jason, we're holding up the line, Neil called forward. People are getting grumpy.
Go, Shade said to Jason. Incorporate the token into your ritual of awakening.
Looking unhappily back at the press of adventurers, Jason went through the shadow gate. On the other side, in the once drowned village at the bottom of the lake,
Gary, Rufus, and Amir's staff were greeting the adventurers as they returned through the archway. They sent the iron rankers shuffling out of the way to make room for the constant stream behind them. Overhead, the magical dome kept out the water. Jason spotted Amir, who was standing and talking with Constance. Next to him was his granddaughter, Kettis. A number of adventurers tried to approach, but were turned away by more of his staff. "Clive, go set up the air bubble ritual," Jason said. "I'm going to chat with Amir, and then we can go see some genuine sky, instead of the fake astral space one."
"I thought the astral space was quite nice," Neil said, as Jason wandered off.
"Since when is he in charge?" Sophie asked.
"I'd give him this one," Humphrey told her in a low voice.
"You mean,"
Sophie replied in little more than a whisper,
"he really did get his hands on the thing?"
"Yes," Humphrey said.
"Oh no,"
Neil groaned.
"He's going to be so insufferably smug,"
Sophie said.
"He did beat all these people," Humphrey said. "This is not inconsiderable competition."
"I'd rather Beth won," Sophie said. "Or Sigrid. Anyone with some humility, really."
"So anyone but Valdis, really," Clive said.
"I think you might want to follow his advice about setting up the ritual," Humphrey said to Clive. "We may welcome a quick escape very shortly."
"Good point," Neil said. "Say what you will about Jason, I doubt it will involve the word understated." They headed in the direction of the closest dome wall. In the meantime, Jason approached the invisible cordon around Amir, marked only by a pair of his staff.
"Greg?" Jason greeted.
"Asano."
"Can I see him?"
Greg turned to glance at Amir, who nodded, and Jason was allowed through. This did not go unnoticed by the other adventurers.
"Welcome back," Amir said, wearily. "I heard that the Arbiter of the Trials refused the scythe to everyone."
"He handed out plenty of books," Jason said. "You'll have no trouble filling the gaps in the young lady's martial education." "G'day, Kettis."
"We've already heard that no one got the scythe," Kettis said.
"Indeed we have," Amir said. "We talked to a couple of people who passed all the trials and said it wasn't given to anyone. Rufus thought differently, though."
"Oh?" Jason asked.
"He said that you wouldn't let something not being possible stop you. He bet me an exquisite bottle of wine that you'd come swaggering out, say something obnoxious, and produce the scythe."
"Well, of course I'm doing that," Jason said.
"I'm not a scrub."
Jason held his hand out, and the scythe appeared, immediately dropping to the ground. The shaft landing on its end smashed cobbles from the sheer weight. Then it toppled over, cracking stone again as it crashed down.
"Watch out for that one," Jason said. "There's a bit of a heft to it."
"Constance,"
Amir said urgently. Amir's chief of staff took out a large black sheet and laid it on the ground. Amir was barely able to lift it, straining even his gold rank strength to hold it up long enough for Constance to slip the sheet under it. After a moment resting on the sheet, gold and silver light started sparkling over it.
"The genuine article,"
Amir said breathlessly. He looked up to see Jason had already strode off, his cloak now swirling around him as he made a beeline for his team at the edge of the dome. They were ready and waiting, their private air bubble like a growth on the side of the dome. While all eyes were on Jason, Rufus and Gary had moved to join Amir.
"What did I tell you?" Rufus asked Amir. "That man cannot help showing off."
"You have to give it to him, though," Gary said. "He knows how to make an exit. I don't think he's done either. Are you seeing that?"
From within Jason's cloak, blue-gray light was shining, emitting from beneath his skin. As he reached his teammates, the onlookers realized that the same light was shining not just from Jason, but his entire team.
"Quest. Legacy of the Reaper. All objectives complete. Quest complete. Reward. Racial gift transfiguration."
Jason had been ignoring the objective completions of the quest because he had never expected to complete it. It was only now that he was willing to revel in the outlandish reward. He conjured his cloak to hide the idiotic grin so wide he felt it trying to unhinge the top of his head. Looking ahead to his team, he saw the light start to shine from them, and he hurried to meet them.
"It feels tingly," Sophie said.
I know you had that quest thing, but I can't believe I can actually do this, Neil said.
The paper I write on this is going to be so well received, Clive said.
Well, Humphrey said, putting a hand on Jason's shoulder. We've officially arrived now. You'd better believe word of this will be spreading around. Let's just go, Jason said. They climbed on the ritual platform Clive had prepared and slid out of the dome. Light continued to shine from them as the assembled adventurers watched them drift away. Outworlder, racial ability, map, has evolved to tactical map, ability, tactical map, transfigured from outworlder ability, map, self-updating map, unveils as areas are explored. A small, semi-opaque map allows tracking of nearby allies and enemies. This is a tracking effect.
Mini-map. Not bad, Jason murmured to himself as his team members looked at their own abilities.
Party member Clive Standish's human racial ability, human ambition, has evolved to thirst for knowledge. Party member Neil Devone's elf racial ability, life affinity, has evolved to lifeguard. Party member Sophie Wexler's celestine racial ability, mana integrity, has evolved to mana wellspring. Party member Humphrey Geller's human racial ability, special attack affinity, has evolved to attack of the Mirage Dragon.
Look at that, Jason said.
Neil really is an elf. Shut up, Asano.
Chapter 62. Shallow Earth. Humphrey's team had been eager to test out their new abilities as soon as they reached shore, but things were a little busy. While the Iron Rankers were in the astral space, even more people had been awaiting their return. Many of the foreign adventurers had brought family, not even including the locals. The Cloud Palace had been placed offshore from a small town that had been going through what was essentially a festival for the better part of 3 weeks. The townsfolk were exhausted, but increasingly wealthy, with towns and villages all around the lake being roped in. A small army of demanding visitors had brought a tidal wave of money to the local economy. Things were all the more vibrant now that a steady stream of adventurers was emerging from the lake and into the jubilant arms of family. Neil's family was present, more than happy to be keeping company with the Gellers. Humphrey's father and sister had returned to Greenstone while he was in the astral space and were waiting with his mother. Even Clive's parents had been roped in by Danielle Geller, looking very awkward next to Greenstone's most prestigious adventurer. All Sophie ever had was her now long-dead father. But Belinda was her sister now, and came at her with a greeting hug. Jason looked at them all, a sense of isolation he hadn't felt in a long time creeping over him. In his old life, only his older sister's family had been close. He eschewed other people. He hadn't been happy, but he hadn't felt lonely either. He was overcome with the memory that this was not his world. His precious connections were also new connections. He had planted roots, but they were still in shallow earth. Bringing his expression under control, he threw on a convincing grin and pulled out a recording stone.
"Hello, family," he said brightly. "I'm back out of the lake now. Job done. I won the little contest because it turns out I'm terrific, but the people up here don't know yet, so I should probably not say that too loudly."
Morning became afternoon, became evening. Jason's team and their families made their way onto the Cloud Palace before word spread of their victory in Amir's contest. Stories of their adventures were told, delighting Humphrey's parents as much as they horrified Clive's. Clive's success in life had certainly enriched them, which to the hard-working Standish family meant a bigger eel farm. They had quite liked that their son had a nice, safe job in an office.
"You can't keep someone with Clive's talent cooped up," Danielle told them. "Did you know Emir has been trying to hire him away?"
"So has Prince Valdis from the Mirror Kingdom," Humphrey said.
"Wait," Clive's mother said. "That Valdis you've been talking about is a prince?"
Sophie made a quiet exit and found Jason hidden away, leaning over a balcony as he watched more adventurers emerge from the water to a bullient welcome. She leaned on the rail beside him, his gaze not moving.
"It's not like you to miss a chance for self-aggrandizement," she said,
but her voice was soft, without the usual sting. "It's family time," Jason said. "Mine is so far away that gods can't broach the distance. They're so far away there aren't even gods there."
Are you sure about that? You didn't believe in magic once, but here we are. Would it be so strange for it to be hidden from you, back on your world?
Knowledge told me that my world lacks the magic to support a god.
And you trust her all of a sudden?
No, but I don't think she's ever lied to me, Jason said. She's like me. Why lie when the facts will do it for you? She's just better at it than I am.
If it makes a difference, she said. I think Danielle Geller is ready to adopt you.
Jason chuckled, and she pulled herself off the railing.
Come back in, she said. What's a gathering without you telling people how great you are?
Excuse me? He asked, also standing up straight. I'll have you know that I'm incredibly humble. I challenge you to find someone more humble than me. The team finally snuck away to test out their new abilities, gathering in the guest hall training room. They didn't escape entirely, with Humphrey's mother, father, and sister watching on from behind the transparent wall of the observation room. Compared to Danielle, her husband Keith was more akin to their son, a solid and reliable counterpoint to her domineering charms. Their daughter, Henrietta, seemed to take her role of Humphrey's older sister seriously. She made it clear that his teammates were yet to meet her approval. Even her stoic gaze had broken in incredulity, however, as Humphrey explained that the whole team had gone through simultaneous racial gift evolutions. It was far from unknown for people to go through such events together, as the circumstances that pushed one person past their limits could easily affect another in the same way. Humphrey and Jason had experienced exactly that in their fight against the Hydra. For an entire team to do so was something else altogether. Despite some probing questions from Danielle and her daughter, the team had agreed to hide Jason's role as the catalyst. There was no hiding that it had happened, though, and the team tested out their new abilities where appropriate. Clive had been initially unhappy with his racial gift. Ability, thirst for knowledge, transfigured from human ability, human ambition. Essence abilities advance more quickly. Learn information through the use of skill books. Skill books. Skill books are for people too stupid to learn the proper way. No offense, Jason. You and your skill book prejudice, Jason said. There's nothing wrong with being a utility guy. My racial gifts aren't exactly cutting my enemies down like wheat. Think of all the mundane things you have to learn that take away from how you really want to spend your time. Now you can just skill book the unimportant stuff and spend your time where it really matters.
Huh, Clive said thoughtfully. I never thought of it like that.
Take martial arts, for example, Jason said. You never took the time to learn hand-to-hand skills. But now you can skill book them. They won't match up to Sophie, or even me, with the time I've put in, but they may be the difference between life and death in a pinch. No one argued that Neil's ability was anything but a boon to the team.
Ability, lifeguard, transfigured from elf, ability, life affinity. Effects used or received with a positive effect on life have greater effect. Using a shield-based essence ability on allies also bestows a heal over time effect.
They tested out the healing, which wasn't especially potent, but still noticeable. When Neil's ability restored health, Sophie's replenished mana.
Ability, mana wellspring, transfigured from Celestine, ability, mana integrity. Ongoing mana costs for maintained abilities are reduced. Reduced to mana drain effects is increased. When mana is not being consumed by an ongoing ability, mana regeneration for self and allies within your aura is significantly increased.
Clive's aura ability likewise increased mana regeneration, and some quick testing with overlapping the auras revealed the combined effect was impressive.
We're never going to run out of mana, Neil said, as he watched his mana bar refill. Jason had shown them how to pull up indicators for mana, stamina, and health.
Speak for yourself, Humphrey said. You may be underestimating how quickly I can burn through it. My dragon essence racial gift lets me burn mana to increase my physical and magical strength. If I use that and run through my powers one after the other, I can empty the tank very quickly.
What about the new one? Jason asked. Yours is the one we've all been waiting for.
Agreed, Neil said.
Why Mirage Dragon?
Stash is a Mirage Dragon, Humphrey said. A mouse poked its head out of Humphrey's chest pocket, and he scratched its head.
I kept him hidden through the trials because I didn't want to draw too much attention.
Mirage dragons are rare, even for dragons, and I don't want anyone trying to kill me and take him.
Well, let's see the new ability, Jason said.
Ability, attack of the Mirage Dragon. Transfigured from human, ability, special attack affinity. You are more likely to awaken special attacks than other ability types. Your special attacks have increased effect. When you make special attacks, you can expend mana to create a short-lived illusory double, replicating the attack. The illusion does not inflict damage or duplicate other effects from the attack, but you can spend mana to switch teleport with it, in the moment it is created. This is an illusion and teleport effect.
What the hell kind of cheat ability is that? Jason asked.
They watched Humphrey and Sophie engage in some light sparring. Humphrey's attacks were suited more for fighting monsters than people, which normally gave her a relatively easy time blocking or dodging them. Even just learning to use his deceptive new double attacks already made the difficulty skyrocket.
That's awful, Sophie said, once they were done. The flexibility that adds to your attacks is just mad.
I think we can safely say who won the racial gift lottery, Jason said, although he was quite happy with his own ability. The mini-map floating in his vision had green dots for his allies and yellow dots for other people. He hadn't encountered an enemy yet, but expected them to show up as red.
Jason sighed.
No, Clive. No, and I mean it.
This is an incredible opportunity. All these people looking for rituals of awakening, and you wouldn't even have to do anything. I'll do the rituals, and you just have to cycle them through your party.
Jason rubbed his temples. Clive, you're not listening. Humphrey, please explain it to Clive. They had quietly occupied one of the guest wing terraces, begging off their families to get some rest. The sun had gone down, but the cloud palace lit up with internal illumination, and they enjoyed the warm night air, reclined on a series of lounges. From below, the sounds of celebration rose up from where the adventurers had set up camp between the cloud palace and the town. After weeks of constant danger, the sudden safety was like releasing a pressure valve. Most of them fell asleep, until Clive started advocating to record every ability awakened with the Reaper Stones so many adventurers had received.
Jason already drew more attention to his abilities than he probably should when we all advanced our racial abilities, Humphrey said. Getting people even more interested is a dangerous proposition.
It's why Rufus, Gary, and Farah warned me to keep the Outworlder thing under my hat, Jason said.
What happens when someone shares your interest in my abilities, Clive, but they're gold rank and don't care about my opinion? I get hauled off in the night and you never see me again.
It just seems like a waste of potential, Clive said.
Before I came here, Jason said, wasting my potential was kind of my thing.
Sometimes you just have to accept what you get and let the rest go, Sophie told Clive.
Jason was deliberately keeping his eyes from where she languidly stretched out on the lounger, concerned they would fall out of his head.
If you run around chasing the best possible result, Neil told Clive, you might miss out on the great thing you gave up to maintain the chase.
Meaning what?
Meaning that Jason isn't going to bend on this, and if you keep pushing, he'll kick you out of the party until we've all done our awakening rituals.
So, you're saying I should be happy with recording the abilities of our own team?
Clive asked, reluctance still thick in his voice.
After that display of the gift evolutions, Neil said, keeping Jason's abilities to ourselves may be closing the gate after the Heidels run off at this point.
Maybe compromise, Asano, let Clive do the awakening rituals for our party, Cavendish's party, and maybe Prince Valdis's. It's not like he isn't already paying attention.
Jason gave a groaning sigh.
I can live with that, he conceded.
Great,
Clive said, erupting out of his chair.
I'll go get things organized.
Hold your heidels, Chief, Jason said. We should get ourselves sorted before we start rounding up anyone else.
He's right, Humphrey said. If nothing else, we have some awakening stones to collect from Emir.
Then let's go find him,
Clive said.
Tomorrow, Humphrey said firmly. Tonight, we rest.
Chapter 63. Relief. On his return to the Cloud Palace the next day, Emir's first action was securing the scythe.
His second was seeking out Jason and his team on the balcony terrace and enjoying a light lunch.
"Join us," Jason said, as Emiya arrived.
"I'm a little busy right now," Emiya said.
"Are you sure?" Jason asked.
"We've got gold plum souffle." "Well," Emiya said, "I suppose we can talk over lunch."
"So, have you come to give us some top-end awakening stones?"
"Actually, I've come to give you 419 time-displaced priests who came out of the archway very confused and asking for you by name."
"Oh, right," Jason said. It turns out that the entity running the trials had a bunch of priests and holy warriors locked up from back in the day. I talked him into letting them all go. I didn't realize there would be quite that many, but I suppose they needed enough for everyone. I wasn't sure he would actually come through and let them out. Are you really leaving them to me to deal with? I'd have thought you'd be all over those people and what they knew.
"Actually, yes," Emiya admitted. "I have a historian on staff who practically had a fit when I told her about them. I think we'll end up thoroughly debriefing them, then turning them over to their various churches to deal with. Whatever we may think of certain religious organizations, right now I don't see much of a better option."
"They may not all want to go back," Jason said. "I could see some of them being disillusioned by what they went through."
"Not everyone is as cavalier with the churches as you, Jason," Emiya said. "If any of them do put their faith aside, you can coordinate with the Adventure Society to sort it out."
"I imagine they'll take it out of my hands," Jason said. "It sounds like more of a 3-star adventurer problem, which is too difficult for simple old me with my solitary star."
"True," Emiya said, earning him an affronted look from Jason. "And about those rewards, I'll have Constance bring you a list of the Awakening Stones we have. You can choose any 5 you like."
"What about the Cloud Palace?" Humphrey asked. "That was the reward that had all the adventurers salivating."
"Obviously, there's only one Cloud Palace to be had," Emiya said. "It's a bonded item, so you'll need to decide which of you it will be bonded to."
"That'll be Jason," Humphrey said. "He's the one that got the scythe, after all." "We should at least talk about it," Jason said.
"We did," Humphrey said. "We all agreed."
Jason looked around at the team, and they all nodded.
"If you don't want it, I'm happy to take it off your hands," Sophie said.
"No, that's fine," Jason said. "I'll take it." They were able to choose 5 stones, 1 for each team member. A legendary stone was the nearest thing to actually selecting a specific power, which made picking from a selection of legendary stones an unparalleled luxury. Constance brought them a list of the stones in Emiya's supply, which turned out to be startlingly large. Neil and Jason both selected Awakening Stones of the Avatar, known for most often producing summoning powers and powerful buffing abilities. Humphrey selected an Awakening Stone of Rebirth, hoping for a powerful recovery power. Sophie, on Constance's advice, selected an Awakening Stone of the Celestials. Clive chose an Awakening Stone of Karma, the same as his Confluence Essence, although he would not be able to use it. They waited in the guest wing as Constance left and came back with a long wooden box, the top of which she slid off to reveal 5 Awakening Stones sitting on black velvet.
"We had 3 of these originally," Constance said as she handed the Stone of the Celestials to Sophie. "They were created from an Outworlder's ability, like Jason's, and I've never heard of them appearing anywhere else. The only reason they appear in the Magic Society records at all is that we allowed the Society to examine them."
"So you don't know what their power inclinations are?"
Clive asked. "The other 2 were both used by Celestines," Constance said. "In both cases, the abilities enhance their natural racial gifts."
Clive handed his stone to Sophie.
"It should pair well with your balance essence and give you something formidable," he said.
Sophie looked down at the stone she was holding in each hand. Each one was valuable on a level she could barely conceive of. Even most essences would not fetch as high a price as these, should someone squander them on the open market. She looked up at Clive, who placed his hand over hers, closing her fingers as she tried to hand it back. He gave her a warm smile. "This is just the beginning," he told her. She looked around uncertainly, but found supporting smiles all around. Even Jason looked uncharacteristically sincere, without his usual expression of thinking of a joke no one else knew about. "So, whose stones do we use first?" she asked.
"Jason's," Clive said. "I want to see what those two Reaper stones produce. Also, he's faster because he doesn't need a ritual."
"Actually, I do want to use one," Jason said. "Shade said I should incorporate this into a ritual." Jason tossed an object to Clive, a square of obsidian with a scythe engraved in silver, along with writing he couldn't read. Clive looked at it, then up at Jason.
"Item, Reaper token. Transcendent rank, legendary. Question mark, question mark, question mark. Consumable, question mark, question mark, question mark. Effect, question mark, question mark, question mark. Effect, question mark, question mark, question mark. This is an astral blessing token," he said. "For the Reaper, right?"
"Yep," Jason said.
"What's an astral blessing token?" Sophie asked.
"It's something great astral beings give out to bestow blessings as signs of approval," Clive said. "They trigger racial gift evolutions, just like the one we all went through. I used one of these myself back when I was Humphrey's age."
"So it's like those star seeds?" Neil asked, shrinking away.
"No," Clive said. "The blessings are harmless. The great astral beings give them out for all kinds of reasons, to those that venerate them or that they approve of. Some astral beings have even given them out to those who work against their interests, because they are enemies worthy of respect."
"And you use them as part of an awakening ritual?" Jason asked, thinking of the other token in his possession, the one the Goddess of Knowledge claimed would send him home.
"Some you can," Clive said. "They tend to arrange for specific abilities if you do. That's something only transcendent beings like gods can arrange. Every token has an additional effect, and some can only be triggered in certain ways. If Shade told you to use it with an awakening ritual, it should probably be with one of the Reaper stones."
"Agreed," Jason said. "How did you get your token, Clive?"
"It just showed up one night while I was studying," Clive said. "There was this patch of moonlight in my room, even though the curtains were closed. And there it was. My mentor knew what it was and helped me use it with my next awakening ritual."
Clive frowned and thought.
"That's one interesting point," he continued. "Your token came from your ability, right? A quest reward."
"That's right," Jason said.
"That shouldn't be possible," Clive said. "Your quest system's ability to produce items is just another loot power variant. It shouldn't be able to produce an astral blessing token. Only great astral beings can do that."
"Maybe I'm secretly a great astral being," Jason said. "I could have knocked up a crappy body, chucked in some fake memories, and shoved a chunk of my consciousness into it to get a mortal perspective. Or for laughs, whatever."
Clive's eyes went wide in horror as he stared at Jason.
"That... no, that can't be... no, but... no. Wait, no, that can't be right."
"Mate, calm down," Jason told him. "I'm not secretly a Reaper."
"But, I mean, conceivably..."
"No," Jason said firmly. "These beings can just make the tokens appear if they like, right? Surely the Reaper, having about a squillion times more power than me, could have tweaked my ability to produce it this one time. Just a reward for getting his magic farming tool."
"Yeah," Clive said, nodding to himself. "That makes more sense."
"Exactly. Now, do you know how to incorporate this thing into an essence ritual?"
"Oh, absolutely," Clive said, perking up. "Let's get into a ritual room and do this."
Clive was as good as his word, setting up a more elaborate magic circle than he had for Sophie's awakenings. Jason stood in the middle, the awakening stone of the Reaper in one hand and the Reaper token in the other.
"Ready?"
Clive asked him. "Yeah," Jason said.
"What are you hoping for?"
Clive asked. "Well, apparently Shade is looking for a new gig," Jason said. "I thought he'd make an awesome familiar."
"Seriously?"
"Why not? Colin's great, don't get me wrong,
but the conversation isn't exactly sparkling."
Clive shook his head and conducted the ritual. It went as normal, aside from the Reaper token melding into his body along with the Awakening Stone, and felt to Jason no different than absorbing them normally.
You have awakened the Dark Essence ability, Shadow of the Reaper. You have awakened 4 of 5 Dark Essence abilities. Ability, Shadow of the Reaper, Dark, Familiar, Ritual, Cost, Extreme Mana, Cooldown, None, Current Rank, Iron, 0, 0%. Effect, Iron, Summon a Shadow of the Reaper to serve as a Familiar.
That looks like a winner, Jason said. I think I might have actually done it. As the others read his ability through the party interface, blue-grey light started shining from Jason's body.
As expected, Clive said. Reaper token has been consumed. Outworlder racial ability, Mysterious Stranger, has evolved to Dark Rider. Ability, Dark Rider. Transfigured from Outworlder, ability, Mysterious Stranger. Language adaption, essence, Awakening Stone, and Skillbook absorption. Immunity to identification and tracking effects. Shadow-based familiars may adopt the form of a mount appropriate to the environment.
Oh, a mount power, sweet, Jason said. Now I don't have to farm all that gold. Then he looked at the requirements for the summoning ritual his new familiar power would require.
Shadow of the Reaper, summoning ritual material requirements. 343 Dark Quintessence Gems, Iron. 2,401 Iron Rank Spirit Coins. 500 grams of Midnight Onyx Power. 1 Midnight Jade. 24 small, square, Nightstone plates.
Farming for crafting mats isn't entirely off the table, it seems.
What are you talking about? Sophie asked.
The ritual to summon my new familiar. It takes a bunch of stuff I don't have.
It should have been the same for your first familiar, right? Clive asked. Even more costly, if anything. Your first familiar is an apocalypse beast, after all.
Did you just say apocalypse? Neil asked. Don't worry about that, Jason said. It's fine. Apocalypse? Neil asked again. I said it's fine. Tell him it's fine, Clive.
He's right, Clive said. Until he reaches diamond rank, it definitely won't be able to wipe out an entire world's worth of life.
What? Clive, I said to tell him it's fine, not anything about scouring the world of life, which Colin would never do.
He might, Clive said.
He wouldn't eat the plants, would he? Jason asked.
Oh, you're probably right, Clive said. Do you still have the book from the blood cult? It might be in that.
Yeah, Farah gave it to me when she was done with it, because of my familiar. Actually, the blood cult is why I had such an easy time summoning Colin. They took off with all the high-end goods, but left behind a pile of iron rank materials. And being a blood cult, there was plenty of iron rank materials to knock out the ritual. When Rufus was splitting the loot, he gave me a spare set in case something happened and I had to resummon the little guy.
You'll have to do some shopping, Humphrey said. In the meantime, how about your other awakening stones?
Oh yeah, Jason said, rubbing his hands together, then plucked another awakening stone from his inventory. Another Reaper Stone. I'm running out of chances to get that necrotic affliction I've been after, and I think this is the one. After the ritual he used to absorb his last stone, quietly absorbing the next one seemed anticlimactic.
You have awakened the Dark Essence ability, Hand of the Reaper. You have awakened 5 of 5 Dark Essence abilities. You have awakened all Dark Essence abilities. Linked attribute, Speed, will advance in conjunction with lowest rank Dark Essence ability. Ability, Hand of the Reaper, Dark. Conjuration, Disease. Cost, low mana per second. Cooldown, None. Current rank, Iron, 0, 0%. Effect, Iron. Conjure a highly flexible, semi-substantial shadow arm that can extend or shrink. Conjured items can be conjured into the shadow hand. Can be used to make melee special attacks. Special attacks made using the arm inflict creeping death, in addition to other effects. Creeping death, damage over time, disease, stacking. Inflicts ongoing necrotic damage until the disease is cleansed. Additional instances have a cumulative effect.
A huge grin spread across Jason's face. The lack of a necrotic damage affliction in his repertoire of abilities had been preying on his mind increasingly as his available slots diminished. The relief at closing the gap in his power set was like finally taking a wee after desperately holding it in for too long, and he let out a contented sigh.
"That power sounds strange," Sophie said, reading the description. "It also sounds creepy. A flexible hand sneaking about."
"It seems like it'll be versatile," Humphrey said. "You can use it to make special attacks, but also increase your ability to reach. It's no telekinesis power, but I imagine you'll get some use out of it."
"I'll give it a try," Jason said. He reached out with his arm, which transmuted into the same shadow stuff his cloak was made of. It extended out to slip around Humphrey's ankle like a constrictor snake. "I can use this in combat for more than just making attacks," Jason said, and yanked back hard with the shadow arm. Humphrey didn't budge, though. Jason instead yanking himself off his feet and falling to an undignified heap. "It doesn't seem to increase my strength at all," he said from the floor.
"You'll need to test it extensively to see what you can and can't do with it," Humphrey told him.
"For now, move on to the next stone."
"Right," Jason said. "I can knock out the last one and someone else can jump into the spotlight."
He took out the last stone, the awakening stone of the Avatar.
"It's going to be a doom power," Jason said.
"Do you think it will be some super hideous affliction?"
"I think it's more likely to be a summoning power," Clive said. "Maybe one that runs around causing afflictions for you."
"I already have Colin for that," Jason said.
"Other than summons," Clive said, "Avatar stones are known for enhancement and transformation powers. If it's from the doom essence, maybe it turns you into a blob of pustulent flesh that spurts gobbets of poisons from the sores all over your body."
Everyone gave Clive a wary look.
"What?" Clive asked.
"That isn't actually an option, is it?" Jason asked.
"Sure it is," Clive said, encouragingly. "I've read a case study about someone with a very similar power. It was actually a fascinating case because the permanent nature of the transformation made it resistant to suppression collars."
"Permanent?" Jason asked, his face wan. "I'm sure it'll be fine," Neil said, happily, giving Jason a pat on the back.
"If it's really bad, we can push you around in a wheelbarrow or something."
"I'm not going to be the one pushing it," Sophie said.
"You're his indentured servant," Neil told her. "I think it has to be you."
"The guy I read about was more or less humanoid," Clive said, "so that shouldn't be an issue."
"More or less?" Jason repeated.
"He certainly had something that could pass as legs," Clive said.
"Maybe I should find an awakening stone more special attack oriented," Jason said.
"Don't let them talk you out of using such a precious stone," Humphrey said. "I'm sure you'll be fine. We would never push you around in a wheelbarrow."
"Thanks," Jason said gratefully.
"We'd have someone make a little magic cart," Humphrey continued. "Probably with something to seal in the smell, because I have to imagine it would be bad." "Oh, it definitely would," Clive said. "Instead of sweating, the guy secreted this oil that kept him cool and killed insects, but was apparently very pungent."
"All right, you all need to stop talking," Jason said.
Chapter 64 Glory. Despite the best efforts of his team to unnerve him, Jason used his final awakening stone, albeit with eyes closed and whispering to himself.
"Don't turn into a blob, don't turn into a blob, don't turn into a blob."
"You have awakened the Doom Essence ability, Avatar of Doom. You have awakened 5 of 5 Doom Essence abilities. You have awakened all Doom Essence abilities. Linked attribute, Spirit, will advance in conjunction with lowest rank Doom Essence ability. Ability. Avatar of Doom. Doom. Familiar, Ritual. Cost, Extreme Mana. Cooldown, None. Current rank, Iron, 0.00%. Effect, Iron. Summon an Avatar of Doom to serve as a familiar."
"Another familiar power," Jason said. "I'm turning into a pet character. I don't suppose anyone knows what an Avatar of Doom is?"
"It isn't something I've heard of," Clive said, pulling out his monster archive tablet.
After looking through for a few moments, he shook his head.
"Not here," he said. "You get that with summoned familiars quite a lot, though, seeing as they're all beings from the deep astral. It's an endless supply of bizarre and terrifying horrors.
We don't know it'll be terrifying, Jason said.
It's called an Avatar of Doom, Neil said. I doubt it's going to be a healer-type familiar.
That's an option? Jason asked. Having your own personal healer?
My sister has one, Humphrey said. But she's a summoning specialist, so she has one of just about everything.
Oh, bloody hell, Jason said, looking over the summoning ritual requirements.
Shadow of the Reaper, summoning ritual material requirements. 108 radiant quintessence gems, iron. 108 void quintessence gems, iron. 1,296 iron rank spirit coins.
These ritual materials are awful, Jason said. Void and radiant quintessence?
Ouch, Clive said. That's going to be worse than the other one.
Lucky we just got a haul of treasure then, Sophie said. That plant quintessence might be common, but we have piles of the stuff and it's bronze rank.
That'll put a dent in the price, Jason acknowledged.
The problem will be sourcing the materials, Clive said. I know the Magic Society has some radiant quintessence, although it won't part with it cheaply. I think the void quintessence will be your main obstacle. It's actually harder to get at iron than it is at higher ranks, even if it's cheaper.
We can worry about that later, Jason said. It's someone else's turn to use their stones.
Right, Clive said. I'll set up a ritual while you all decide who goes next.
We still need to organize my stones, Sophie said. I'll wait until later.
Sensible, Humphrey said. Would you like to go next, Neil? Is there any chance of Neil turning into a blob monster? Jason asked Clive, hopefully. Clive hummed thoughtfully as he used his power to draw out a ritual circle.
If I recall correctly, Clive said, you have open spots in the shield and growth essences, right, Neil?
The Avatar Stone could have some blob-related results in the growth essence. As for the Reaper Stone, who knows?
That's comforting, Neil said. I was more looking for another summon, or maybe a buff spell. A shield golem would be nice.
Shield golem? Jason asked.
That actually does sound awesome. I hope you get that.
Neil's ritual of awakening went off without incident in Clive's capable hands.
You have awakened the growth essence ability, Hero's Moment. You have awakened 5 of 5 growth essence abilities. You have awakened all growth essence abilities. Linked attribute, Spirit, will advance in conjunction with lowest rank growth essence ability. Ability, Hero's Moment, Growth, Spell, Boon, Recovery. Cost, Extreme Mana. Cooldown, 24 hours. Current rank, Iron, 0.00%. Effect, Iron. Bestow a powerful boon on an ally, increasing all attributes and resistances by a significant amount. They receive damage reduction, their maximum mana and stamina are increased, and they gain ongoing mana and stamina recovery. They ignore the effects of rank disparity. When this effect ends, they are temporarily debilitated, suffering the inverse of all previous effects.
There's that buff you were looking for, Jason said.
That'll turn Humphrey into a monster.
I think the more interesting application will be Neil's summon, Clive said. We've barely tapped into what we can do with it. You may or may not remember that when heavily damaged, it undergoes a transformation based on what it was subjected to before the change. Imagine what it would get out of having that spell used on it.
That's an interesting point, Humphrey said. One of our strategic thin spots is our summons. We have a few strategies built around Jason's leech swarm, but mine and Neil's summons have been rather underutilized. Once we add in Jason's new familiars, we'll have quite the selection of allies at our command. As Clive set up the next ritual, the others postulated Neil's last ability.
The only unawakened ability I have is from the shield essence, Neil said. What kind of ability will come from a stone associated with death?
Another one of your quick bubble shields? Jason guessed. It could have retributive damage like your burst shield ability.
What about a death wall? Humphrey said. I remember during the last monster surge, I was up on the outer walls with my father. A swarming pack of Margols came pouring at us, and one of my family members put up this sheet of energy. Every monster that went through it died on the spot.
You have awakened the shield essence ability, Reaper's Redoubt, You have awakened 5 of 5 shield essence abilities. You have awakened all shield essence abilities. Linked attribute, power, will advance in conjunction with lowest rank shield essence ability. Ability, Reaper's Redoubt, shield. Spell, dimension, cost, extreme mana, cooldown, 6 hours. Current rank, iron, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Take allies into a dimensional space briefly while flooding the area with death energy, dealing disruptive force damage, necrotic damage, and inflicting creeping death. Creeping death, damage over time, disease, stacking, inflicts ongoing necrotic damage until the disease is cleansed. Additional instances have a cumulative effect.
I know I'm new at this whole adventurer thing, Sophie said, but that ability sounds really strong, right?
That's the same affliction as my ability, Jason said. Must be a favorite of the Reaper.
The fact that it takes 6 hours before becoming available again suggests it certainly is strong, Humphrey said. The other ability takes a whole day. Judgment of when to use your powers will be key, Neil.
Nothing new there, Neil said.
The utility of that new ability will depend on how close we have to be to Neil to be taken into the dimensional space, Humphrey assessed. I don't think being left behind for those other effects would be a pleasant experience.
It feels like I can take in anyone within about 12 meters, Neil said. I think we can work with that range.
Essence users all had an instinctive understanding of their abilities, as the Awakening Stones imprinted them on the user's soul. Even without using them, there was an intrinsic understanding of an ability's properties. This was only ever hampered in unusual instances, like Jason and his shadow teleport. Until he had broken through the mental block to give himself completely over to magic, Jason had been unable to make the shadow jump work. Even then, however, he had an understanding of how it should work. Neil's estimate of his new power's parameters was therefore considered trustworthy. After Neil, they moved on to Humphrey. The Awakening Stone of the Reaper gave him a special attack, unsurprisingly for a human.
You have awakened the magic essence ability, Spirit Reaper. You have awakened 5 of 5 magic essence abilities. You have awakened all magic essence abilities. Linked attribute, Spirit, will advance in conjunction with lowest rank magic essence ability. Ability, Spirit Reaper, magic. Special attack, melee, dimension, drain. Cost, low mana and stamina, cooldown, none. Current rank, iron, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Inflicts additional disruptive force damage and drains mana. Has additional effect against incorporeal or semi-corporeal creatures.
An attack specialized in fighting incorporeal opponents, Humphrey said. I might have been disappointed if I hadn't just spent weeks fighting those Vorger creatures. Magic weapons could affect them, but not well. Also, don't overlook the use of disruptive force damage at breaking through magic defenses, Neil said. It can break down magical shields like mine much faster than normal. They moved on to Humphrey's final stone. He had chosen an Awakening Stone of Rebirth, hoping for a recovery power that would increase his staying power in an extended fight, or let him run at full steam for longer in a short one. He had chosen it specifically on the advice of his mother. She wanted him to avoid the flaw in her own ability set. Her powers were outrageously potent, but at a cost of rapidly consuming mana and stamina. In short bursts, she was close to invincible within her rank. Extended conflicts would leave her vulnerable, however, too drained to use her formidable abilities.
You have awakened the Might Essence ability, Immortality. You have awakened 5 of 5 Might Essence abilities. You have awakened all Might Essence abilities. Linked attribute, Power, will advance in conjunction with lowest rank Might Essence ability. Ability, Immortality, Might. Special ability, Healing, Recovery. Cost, none. Cooldown, 24 hours. Current rank, Iron, 0.00%. Effect, Iron. Instantly restore a large portion of health, mana, and stamina. Amount restored is based on how depleted health, mana, and stamina are when the ability is used.
Seriously? Jason asked. I was happy with my shadow arm power, and this guy gets immortality.
In fairness, Sophie said, what would you say if I asked whether you or Humphrey deserve the better power?
I'd say me, obviously, Jason said. I'll lie through my teeth if there's immortality in it.
You'll lie through your teeth if there's a halfway decent lunch spread in it, Neil told him.
That's fair, Jason acknowledged cheerfully.
Congratulations, Clive said to Humphrey, slapping him on the arm. You just acquired what may be the single most sought-after power in the world. Of course, it won't actually bring you back from the dead until gold rank.
So, it's real immortality? Sophie asked.
It's a famous power, for obvious reasons, Clive said. The Magic Society has extensive records on it. There are various limitations on its power to bring back the dead, of course. It's rumoured those limits are reduced or even eliminated at diamond rank, but I don't have the authority to access those kinds of records.
Looks like Humphrey won the Essence Power Lottery, Jason said.
You should remember that you've already come back from the dead, Clive said to Jason, grabbing the attention of the group.
It's an outworlder thing, Jason said dismissively. Clive can explain while we go shopping. Jason turned to Sophie. You said Belinda was checking out the market, right?
That's right, Sophie said.
Let's go see if we can find her then. A market had sprung up in the adventurer camp between the Cloud Palace and the nearby town. Adventurers had come from the trials with dimensional bags overflowing with loot, just as Greenstone's brokers had anticipated. A series of tents, even bamboo buildings, hastily erected with magic, had formed an impromptu trade fair. Jason's voice chat allowed them to contact Belinda and arrange a meeting place, but Constance intercepted Jason and the others on their way out of the Cloud Palace.
Jason, she said, Emir would like to meet with you about the priests you liberated during the last trial.
Oh, he said, frowning. All right. You lot go ahead to the market and I'll meet up with you later. Jason followed Constance to Emir's tower-top office. It was the same as his previous visit, a flat space under a translucent dome, broken up by pools of water with plants growing from them. To Jason's surprise, the head of the Adventure Society inquiry team, Tabitha Gert, was there. She gave Jason an assessing glance but said nothing, leaving with Constance via the elevating platform as soon as Jason arrived. Emir was sitting behind a desk that, like his chair, was made of cloud stuff. On the opposite side of the floor, a similar chair rose from the floor as Emir waved at Jason to join him. Jason sat down, glancing at the piles of paper on Emir's desk.
As it turns out, Emir said, following Jason's gaze, no small part of treasure hunting is logistics. I signed up for the world travel and daring do, yet somehow ended up buried in administration. I still need to present you the Cloud Palace, but I want to carve out a proper amount of time for that. Such an unusual item requires a certain amount of instruction that I don't intend to rush, and there are other concerns to be going on with.
You need something from me regarding these priests who escaped the trials? Jason asked. You brought in their churches, right?
Yes, although there are inevitable problems. One is with our old friend, the Church of Purity, of whom a full quarter of the priests belong.
Did Cal check out the Vane estate? Jason asked.
He did. From what he can tell, it was the regrouping point for the Builder cult members that scattered after escaping the desert astral space. They moved on afterwards, however.